I call this committee of the House. Wait, I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. And note for the record that a quorum is present. And the first order of business is the approval of the minutes from Monday, April 3rd, 2023. Representative Nash, have you had a chance to review those minutes? It looks like you...
They look
you,
great, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful. So Representative Nash moves the approval of the minutes from Monday, April 3rd, 2023. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. And so... today we have five bills up, and we have a hard stop at 4:30 for caucus and other things tonight as well. And so we can come back from 6:30 until sundown, but I'm hopeful we could get through these bills. Today it's a lot of procedural work. We're going to have three different, depending on how we count the pensions bill, but we'll have the climate and energy and the environment and natural resources budget bills. And we'll be starting today with some of the combining to match up with the Senate and the conference committee structures. And so for those that have been on Ways and Means before, you will remember some of those procedural motions we need to make to get these bills merged. And so it'll be a little atypical in terms of we'll start with laying the primary bill over, or laying the first bill we hear over, hearing the primary vehicle bill, and then merging the bills. So it'll be a little bit different in terms of procedural motions. But we also have the chance that each will have bill to be voted on separately before they're merged for the final vote as well. So that I know in the past that has been something that the minority party has asked for. So we will make sure to keep that procedurally done in the same way so that there's that chance for a separate vote. And so our first bill today is House File 313100, the Pensions Bill, Representative Herr. And so I will move that House File 3100 be placed on the General Register. And you have a DE2 amendment for your bill. So I will move the DE2 amendment. And there is an A2 amendment to the DE2. Would you like to do that first?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could, if someone could move the A2 amendment, and I can talk a little bit about what that is. It is actually just deleting Article 7, which is a secure choice piece of it. Okay. And so that will just will go on itself as a standalone bill.
Okay, so I will move the A2 amendment, which Representative Herr just discussed. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A2 amendment to the DE2 is adopted. So to the DE2 amendment as amended, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Olson. And this actually is a really good bill, and it is a bipartisan bill. So the secure choice was the only piece that maybe there was a little bit of consternation of having it in the bill. Even out of pensions, it passed unanimously with bipartisan support. Only one GOP from the House or the Senate voted against it. We are a bicameral body. And so this bill has large bipartisan support. And what it really does is that the bill just looks at allocating the $600 million that was targeted for the target that was given to the Pensions Commission. And so we did COLA. So Section 1, the Article 1, just talks about reducing the assumed rate of return, which we need to do that based on what the actuary has recommended to us. Article 2 is COLA increases. Article 3 deals with technical changes for the Minnesota State Retirement System. Article 4 is the Public Employee Retirement Association changes there. And Article 5 specifically to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement. And then Article 6 speaks to the appropriations for each of the different plans. And so now with Article 7, the secure choice moved out, it's just really technical pieces of how the funds were allocated between the different pension plans within the commission's purview. So that's really the gist of the bill. And like I said before, it is a bill that has bipartisan support. And so I can answer any questions people may have on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Herr. So discussion to the DE2 amendment as amended. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Herr, thank you for carrying this bill. And also thank you for providing the caveat on the bill that this one is actually a good bill, unlike the other ones. We this side of the aisle appreciates that. We've received a lot of correspondence in the legislature regarding, I believe it's House File 1234. Mm-hmm. Can you just provide some context from a fiscal perspective on that for members of the committee? I know we've gotten lots of communications. You sent an email update out during the Easter recess, but just for members who may not have seen that?
Representative Hurd.
Chair Olson, Representative Garofalo, thank you for that question. So House File 1234 is moving separately, but the funding for it is in our budget. So there is $104 million that has been set aside in order to fund that particular bill. And that bill actually just looks at addressing the duty disability for our officers to ensure that that plan stays healthy for our future police officers in order for them to be able to, you know, use the benefits or retire one day as well, and really addressing to ensure that officers actually get the health care that they deserve and they need regarding PTSD from the job. And so and it's creating a system that allows them to be able to get the services they need and the care that they need and also then the benefits that they need during those time periods.
Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hur, I know with pension bills, a lot of these things are come to us. They're consensus-oriented. One of the concerns I have is that despite the fact that our pension funds are not at 100%, we're still seeing some benefit increases in there in terms of the one-time COLA adjustments. Can you, for the advocates who supported that, can you provide some context for the arguments they made for why we're doing that despite the fact that the pensions aren't yet fully funded?
Representative Hur.
Chair Olson, Representative Garofalo, thank you for that question. That's a good question. So actually the COLA increases are one-time COLA increases, and so it will only happen just this time. We don't have any future. We don't make any structural changes with this bill except for the one to St. Paul teachers, which actually they're paying for. We put some funding from this target into that, but then they're paying for the extra increase for their teachers in the St. Paul plan. But otherwise, none of the provisions in this plan create structural changes that will have ongoing costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative O'Neill, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, so there's a provision in the higher ed bill that's coming up next that's a TRA. Is there any coordination or interplay between the higher ed bill and that change to TRA and what your bill is doing?
Representative Hur.
Chair Olson, Representative O'Neill, I was in initial discussions with Speaker and Chair Joachim on that, but I didn't know that it was actually had been included because that is separate from our bill. So whatever happens within that particular piece of the bill won't impact our omnibus pension bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the DE2 as amended is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the DE2 as amended has been adopted. So to House File 3100 as amended, any further discussion? Representative Hur, last word.
Oh, sorry. I started getting ready to leave, Carolson. Thank you so much. No, I appreciate the support from Ways and Means, and hoping to have further discussion with anybody who might have specifics. I think that Chair Olson, can I just make a quick clarification for Representative O'Neill's question? Because I think I might have misunderstood it.
Sure.
And I did get a little bit of a clarification here that what she was referring to was, and maybe I'm wrong, but it was referring to the IRAP increase. Is that correct? Or was that a different piece that you were thinking of?
Representative O'Neill.
Sorry. I almost answered, but I stopped myself. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's in with the section, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head now, with unemployment insurance, and there's a change to increase a little bit of the employer part of TRA as it relates to higher ed institutions. So it's, I believe it's all three of the institutions. But we have the chair here. Maybe he can speak to it. But I was just wondering if you and Chair Plowski maybe had talked about that provision in the higher ed bill relating to TRA.
Madam Chair.
Representative Plowski.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at it right now. I think it's what you want, page 49, section 28. We're carrying it in this bill just for clarification because it deals with higher ed employees. Mm-hmm. So that's why the language is in the higher ed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hur.
That is it, Chair Olson. Thank you. And Representative, we can always talk offline, too, because I think the IRAP bills were heard in pensions. So if there's specific details, we can definitely talk about that. But thank you for giving us the opportunity to have the bill in front of you, and I look forward to the support.
So I renew my motion that House File 3100, as amended, be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on the general register. Thank you, Representative Hur. So the next bill is House File 2754, Representative Acomb. And so this bill, as I mentioned, this bill is going to be temporarily laid over until we hear the environment budget bill, and then we'll be bringing this back up to merge together to match the Senate committee structure. So we're going to begin that process now. So I will move that House File 2754 be before the committee, and we have several amendments we'll take up. Would you like to do those first, Representative Acomb?
Yes, please.
So I will move, or Representative Acomb will move the A-16 amendment. And then you have a technical amendment that we just caught today, the A-17 amendment to the A-16 amendment. So Representative Acomb moves the A-17 amendment to the A-16 amendment. Do you want to discuss the A-17 technical amendment, please, Representative Acomb?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, yes, the A-17 is just that. It's a technical amendment that lines up the appropriations piece with the spreadsheet. The numbers were on the spreadsheet. It was just a miss.
Great. Any discussion to the A-17 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A-17 amendment is adopted. And so to the underlying A-16 amendment as amended, would you please describe your amendment, Representative Acomb?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will say the first part of this amendment, it seems like it's a hefty amendment. The first 21 pages is really just reordering the provisions to line up again with the spreadsheet. So it can be then the bill can be read in concert with the spreadsheet, and it's not a lot of flipping back and forth. So there are some technical changes within there, very, very, very minor, nothing substantive. And the major part of the change within the A-16 is including a provision to codify an agreement between Xcel Energy and Prairie Island. As you all know, the Xcel Energy nuclear facility is very close to the Prairie Island Indian community. We weren't able to draft a bill for this agreement. That both parties came and testified when we did our bill in the last day of committee. And so, in essence, what the provision does is codify an agreement between the two entities, recognizing that Prairie Island, given their proximity, shares some risks of living so close to the nuclear facility. And so what this arrangement does is Xcel Energy currently pays Prairie Island $2.5 million a year in the fuel clause, and it will up that amount to $10 million a year, which is the same payment amount that they make to Red Wing for property taxes and such. And so it's given the proximity, it's a felt like a justified amount. And then $2.5 million a year will come from the renewable development account in terms of a cask fee. And it will be $50,000 per year per cask. Currently, there are 50 casks, so that works out to $2.5 million a year. And that will go up as casks continue to accrue. And this is really an arrangement that is the first start of Xcel looking to extend their nuclear license at the Prairie Island facility. And so conversations with them. I will say the impact that it'll have on ratepayers for the increase of $10 million is about 17 cents a month per bill. And I've also been told that it will save money for ratepayers down the road in decommissioning costs. So it gives a longer off-ramp to decommission the facility when it, in fact, does decommission. So with that, I'm open to questions about that.
Discussion to the A-16 amendment. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Acomb, that we had a nice conversation before the meeting and before the hearing. I appreciate that. In that conversation, I was kind of waiting for you to say it, but is this agreement actually agreed upon, or is this like a work in progress and this is kind of a placeholder for when the final agreement is actually done? Because I know there's concerns, and I don't need to get into what that is. You can say it if you like, but I know that there are concerns all over the board. So I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. Yeah, so there are conversations that are continuing to happen, and the Senate may have a different take on this agreement, and ultimately it will be decided in conference, likely. But conversations will absolutely continue, and, you know, I think some parties want more renewable development money paid, and you know, there's a whole spectrum of ways that this could be figured out. So it will conversations will continue. Given the fact that we were coming to Ways and Means, we felt an urgency to ensure that there was a placeholder within our bill, recognizing how important it is that we make sure Prairie Island is taken care of.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam. So you had kind of alluded to this, but this is really not the agreement, so to speak. There are concerns all over the board, and one of them would be that this is going, most of the bulk of the money is actually going to be borne by taxpayers, the ratepayers of Xcel Energy, which I am one. I live in that community. I live in near Monticello, near that plant. Mm-hmm. I guess one thing that you had said that I was a little bit curious about, and it goes to kind of the money and why we're doing this, is you had said that this is what it takes to extend the license. And maybe I mistook what you said, but are you saying that if the Prairie Island Indian community doesn't come to some kind of agreement with Xcel Energy, that the licensure cannot be extended? I'm not quite sure. I've not heard this before, so if you could enlighten me.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative. Maybe I misspoke. If that was how it came off, that wasn't what I intended. This was an agreement, given the proximity of the Indian community to the nuclear plant. And so I think that as Xcel, it starts to explore the opportunities to expand their licensure, I think they recognize the importance of having Prairie Island Indian community as a partner, and they recognize the challenges it would have by not having them as a partner.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I don't want to get too deep into this because this is Ways and Means, but you just said something that I hadn't heard before, and I've heard a lot about this particular conversation. I'm not really sure if you're going to put this language in, it's not agreed upon, it is a placeholder. What is going to happen after today when it hits the floor? Are you thinking that you're going to be drafting maybe another amendment for the floor? What's going to happen from here, do you think?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I will say is this is the House position. And so as we go into the bill passage and conferencing with the Senate, this is the House position.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have for right now. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Akam, so your committee has an extremely generous target given the size of our budget surplus. I'm just wondering, in light of the fact that we have an unprecedented amount of resources in the hands of government right now, why are we relying on the ratepayers for this extra money as opposed to just using existing funds?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. I think that this is this agreement was made between two entities, the tribe and the utility. And so I think putting state resources or the renewable development account, which was established to expand renewable energy to replace things like nuclear or fossil fuels that are dangerous and bring harm to our community. And so if we are, that's not necessarily, in my opinion and in our opinion, that is not the position or that's not the appropriate use of renewable development funds. And so by agreeing to use a portion of them, we are compromising because we feel it's really important to ensure that Prairie Island Indian community is compensated appropriately.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Akam. So I certainly understand why this agreement is a good deal for Xcel Energy and the Prairie Island Indian community. From Xcel Energy's perspective, they're getting more of a guarantee of preserving an asset that they will get a long-term rate of return on. So it's a good deal for them. It's a good deal for their shareholders. From Prairie Island's perspective, no criticism of them. I don't want to speak on their behalf, but my guess is they could care less where the money comes from as long as they get compensated. So this agreement between Xcel and Prairie Island's a real good deal for them. But I'm just wondering if any ratepayer organizations come in and advocated and said this is a good deal for them. Is it the people who are paying the bills? Have any of them signed off on this, or were they represented in these negotiations?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. I would say this is part of the process, and the bill amendment included the language, and we will continue to hear from people as they're made aware. I think, as I said earlier, the impact on ratepayers, and I'm not in any way trying to minimize that, will be 17 cents a month, and if the license is extended, it will save ratepayers money in the decommissioning costs. And this will not be paid if the license is not extended.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Akam, you correctly stated that when these dry cask fees, this tax on nuclear power, was created, it was designed as part of a compromise to allow cask fees with the intent that money would be used to fund alternatives to nuclear energy. Now, with the passage of the carbon-free bill earlier this year, and now the extension of the relicensing of the nuclear plant, it appears that is no longer the objective of some. That, in fact, and I think this is a good thing, that we're keeping these nuclear assets in our portfolio. That being said, these cask fees keep going up every year, and they keep getting paid for by ratepayers. Right now, the cask fees at Monticello and Prairie Island, what are they paying? What are ratepayers paying annually right now for those costs? How much is that are ratepayers paying?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. For the Prairie Island storage casks, ratepayers pay $500,000 a year, and there are 50 casks, so that math works out to $25 million. In Monticello, they're paid $350,000 a year, and there are 30 casks. Is that right? And so that works out to just over $11,000. I think the total is about $36 million in total. There are some existing commitments to that fund or to that amount, and so I think what is seen from our perspective is about $25 or $26 million a year.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Akam, just to be clear, so the ratepayers are paying $37 million. There may only be $22 or $24 million available for
yes.
legislators to spend, but that's what ratepayers are paying right now. And every year, that amount of money is going up. Just a concern I have, again, is that we see this change combined with the community solar gardens changes in the bill. We see the elimination of a sunset for an assessment on utility on ratepayers in the bill. These things have a cumulative impact, and this is why Minnesota's electricity rates are rising faster than the rest of the nation, on average, than the rest of the nation. This is why people are paying more. And at a time of unprecedented resources in the hands of government, it would seem that there'd be very modest efforts we could undertake to actually be reducing costs of energy for those who are paying into the system, not those. So, again, hats off to Xcel and Prairie Island for making this agreement among themselves, but this reminds me of what we saw in the movie Office Space. Remember where they figure out a way to take a little bit of money from everyone and then they pull it together, and I'm the only one who saw Office Space? Okay, all right. And so what we're seeing here is a continual pattern, whether it's in the tax code, whether it's in our utility system, where we end up having everybody pay a little bit more, and then there are certain select people and entities that get preferred benefits out of it, whether it's a tax code or utilities or otherwise. So I'm opposed to this amendment. I'm opposed to the increase, the elimination of the sunset in the bill. I'm opposed to the community solar garden things. These are all things that are 100% paid by ratepayers. There's no shifting. There's no cost absorbed by others. And it's another example of going the wrong way. So I'm opposed to this and would ask members to vote no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the A16 amendment. Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just, on 2517, on page, yes, line 17, page 25, talks about the extended operation of the plant. This would not supplant or change the normal licensing process that Xcel would have to go through with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and all other PUC, all of these other entities that have to weigh in, correct? This is, that process is still in place for relicensing, correct?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein. Absolutely, that process would still be required for the utility to go through, 100%.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the A16 amendment. Oh, Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. They represent Elk River, which is part of Sherburne County, and before that represented Big Lake Township before redistricting, which is, as you know, right across the river from Monticello Power Plant. Should Sherburne County and Big Lake Township get a cut of what is paid for storage at Monticello? You can see the power plant from our side of the river. Should they get a cut?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I appreciate the question. I think it's a valid one. I think the proximity of Prairie Island and the community next to the nuclear plant and the storage is unprecedented across the country as far as the short distance it is away. And I think out of that, along with the history, the troubled history maybe of the utility and the tribe, I think there comes a desire to have a workable solution that gives benefit to the Indian community and the proximity to the nuclear waste and the nuclear plant. They are very close. I think it's 700 yards. It's close. I don't want to say a number because I will get it wrong. But they're very close. And so it's because of that that this agreement has been born. And that's just what that is.
Representative Novotny.
Well, thank you, Chair. Once again, we can walk across the river at the dry part of the summer and go touch the bank at the Monticello side where the facility is. And as I said, you can see it from our side of the river. No, it's 700 yards. That's probably pretty fair. With the issues going on at Monticello, we're downriver of them. So I'll be looking for that bill and appreciate your support on that then. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A16 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, the A16 as amended is now before the committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I will say is this is a really good bill. And it does a lot of good things for Minnesotans. It recognizes the opportunity to make targeted investments in renewable energy to benefit Minnesotans and to decrease energy costs for people. It does it in a way that really focuses on low and middle income Minnesotans to ensure those that have historically been left out of this renewable energy transition are a part of it and are an integral part of it. And so the, climate justice provisions, the renewable energy provisions, the policy, I know this is a fiscal committee, so I won't get too far into the policy, but there's a lot of policy as well that will make things better for Minnesotans and their energy costs more affordable. I urge your support.
Discussion to the bill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when I was in committee, we had a long conversation about the section in here that was authored by Representative Bierman, and it has to do with weatherization and pre-weatherization. And there's a lot of money, $45 million, I believe it was the number, in the bill. Can you just let this committee know, because we finally got basically to the definition in our committee, mostly born out of a testifier that kind of got us curious about it. But can you just explain, $45 million is a big portion of this bill, specifically for pre-weatherization. Can you just explain what pre-weatherization means and what we will be paying for now, we the taxpayers?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may ask Mr. Eloff to join me. He was part of the conversation about that definition, and he may be able to come up with a specific language. But what I will say is weatherization, when we look at buildings and homes, 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from buildings. And so if we can make homes more efficient, they're healthier for people. And so investing in them to have better outcomes, both in an environmental and a climate way, are helpful as well. And it also impacts health. And so I think Mr. Eloff can get us the description or the definition that Representative O'Neill is referring to.
Well, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Eloff, House Research. I don't have a definition per se. In committee, the Department of Commerce was testifying. In the eco bill that was passed 2 years ago, there was a provision stating that the Commissioner of Commerce would convene a task force to come up with a list of pre-weatherization measures. That has been done. That list, I think, was gone over a little bit during in committee. One thing I will say to make it, pre-weatherization, nobody knows what it means. There are some examples. If you go to a home and there's a broken window, federal law prohibits you from using federal funds to do weatherization in that house. This bill allows state money to be used to fix that window so that federal funds can then be used to weatherize the house. Same thing in terms of if there's mold found in the house, federal law prohibits federal funds being used to weatherize that house. This bill would allow that to happen. There's also a strange federal law that says the work must be done in the same federal fiscal year. This bill will allow that to be set aside and the weatherization to occur at any time. Those are the kinds of barriers there are right now because of federal law that would be addressed by this bill. And we were told by the Department of Commerce that I believe 40% of the houses that are on the list to be weatherized are rejected because of those federal laws. And this bill is attempting to make it more possible for those houses to receive weatherization services.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Akam and Mr. Eloff. So I actually got a list from the Department of Commerce. It's a very long list, and it includes things like decluttering. So if someone's house is hoarded, this money could go to remove the hoard to get to whatever needs to be weatherized. As Mr. Eloff pointed out, it could be black mold remediation. So if black mold is throughout the house, it could be removing everything that has black mold on it and restoring all of that. If that black mold was caused by a pipe leak, which a lot of times it is, plumbing is included. If there's a roof leak, it includes the repair of the roof or a replacement of the roof. If the siding is bad, it just goes on and on and on. Literally anything that causes a house to be in disrepair that could limit it from doing what's considered weatherization would be included and now paid for by the taxpayer. And when I asked the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce that specific question, she really doubled down, in my view, that, no, we absolutely need to do this. We've been walking away from these homes for too long, and we need to, which I'm assuming, and actually it's not $45 million, it's $46 million plus $10 million from RDA to do the pre-weatherization. So it is a big chunk of this bill. This bill overall has a 513% increase over base. It's a lot of money. This bill has a lot of money. This is a big portion of it. And, you know, if that's what we want to do is we want to repair the entire house from top to bottom so that it can be weatherized, that's what this, you know, the $56 million actually does. So that's what that does. I'm wondering one other quick thing, because I know this is Ways and Means, but so the solar community solar gardens. Community solar gardens is one of the most expensive ways you could possibly produce energy, short of biomass, which we finally got rid of as that we were subsidizing it. But can you just tell the committee what we're doing to change community solar gardens? I was hoping we were going to eliminate it because it's an incredibly expensive program, unnecessarily expensive. It increases rates. And if you ask Excel, which I'm not going to, they're here, but I'm not going to, it is an ever-increasing cost to the ratepayer. So I'm wondering if you could just explain to the committee what is the change. I was really hoping it was going to be eliminate, because that would really be the right answer. But what are we doing with community solar gardens?
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I'm just going to circle back to pre-weatherization. And the number one thing that is done in homes for pre-weatherization is vermiculite removal. And so this is not decluttering. It's not any of the things that maybe are included in some exhaustive list. The vast majority of the funds are used for that, which are incredibly helpful for people living in those homes. As far as your question about community solar, I think that, as I stated in committee, and as I will say again, in Minnesota, we have a need and a use for rooftop solar, smaller, medium-sized projects, as well as utility-scale solar. And so while I understand and have heard from many the concerns about the cost of the community solar program, I want to, and I want to address that. I think that we need to have a program that is cost-effective and also fills this niche of a medium-sized solar array that can be placed throughout Minnesota in places where there's space available on our grid. And so the flexibility of community solar can be incredibly helpful. And in looking at comparing community solar costs to other forms of solar, like utility scale, oftentimes they are not taking into account the transmission that needs to be built to in order to take advantage of the larger solar. So I think that there are costs that maybe are eliminated or not looked at in one, but need to be when we look at the whole picture.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I appreciate that. I just wanted to know what you've changed in the bill, and if you could let the committee know that. And I would say that even members of the PUC don't like community solar because they don't regulate it. So they don't get to have their stamp of approval on it. So there is that too. But if you could just tell us what the bill actually does to change community solar.
Representative Akam.
Well, the bill that is within our bill that's before us today is expanding it to include all the public utilities, is increasing the size of the arrays from 1 kilowatt to 5 kilowatts. And so there are changes that we have brought in, and we will continue to have conversations with utilities and stakeholders as the process continues. We are making hurdles by going through Ways and Means and hopefully to the House floor, and yet we don't adjourn for a while. We still have a lot of work and a lot of time to get work done.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're making a very expensive program expanded across the entire state, not regulated by the PUC, and not curtailing the cost. That's what I heard you say. I, just for that reason alone, I would be an absolute no on the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the bill. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Akam, thank you for your work on this bill. I do want to highlight for members a couple of things here on the fiscal spreadsheet. If you look on line 154, these are numbers that are versus base. We see that there's an additional $12.4 million in electric vehicle rebates. This committee knows my longstanding objection to electric vehicles and how much I dislike them. In seriousness, though, if you look at line 163 at $20 million and 165 at the solar rewards withholding for $10 million, Madam Chair and members, these are programs that are already being heavily incentivized, subsidized, whatever language you want to use, from the federal level. The combination of those funds with these funds are ensuring that you're going to have projects that a majority of the funds will be coming from incentives and subsidies, as opposed to actually having people paying for the cost of their programs. This bill is an extraordinary expansion in the size and scope of spending. whether you're looking at general fund, whether you're looking at what is a near doubling of the renewable development account spending for the upcoming biennium. And it sets up a fiscal cliff for the ongoing biennium. Now, we should note, again, we're in the confines of a $17.5 billion budget surplus, and we have a majority party that is insisting on raising assessments, taxes, and fees. That's with that environment. And so now when we look off into the tails into 25 and 26, we are supposed to believe that the DFL majority is suddenly going to find and believe in fiscal austerity going into the tails. Well, that ain't going to happen. If you're going to raise taxes with a surplus to fund a 40% increase in general fund spending, you're certainly going to be raising taxes to maintain that level of spending into the future. And this bill is the first of many that we will be seeing where we have an unsustainable pathway of government spending, an unprecedented expansion in unsustainable spending. I'll be voting no on this bill and will encourage members to do the same. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I will go to Representative Akam for final words on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I just want to address a couple of things that were just mentioned by Representative Garofalo, and that's the RDA spending is higher this year because we didn't pass a bill last year. So there's a whole lot of work that went undone last year, and this bill has the opportunity to address that. So that's that. And then also you'll notice in so many places that this is one-time funding, and we put it in statute as one-time funding. This is not intended to be ongoing. This is an opportunity where we can make a real difference and partner with the federal government to expand renewable energy, to address climate change, and to do it in a way that brings low and moderate income Minnesotans along. So with that, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Akam. And with that, House File 2754, as amended, is laid over. So thank you. And now we're going to go to House File 2310, Representative Hansen. So welcome to the committee, Representative Hansen. Good to see you. And I will move that House File 2310 be placed on the general register. And you also have two amendments. We'll get those amendments going so the bill is in the shape you'd like. So first, I will move the A18 amendment. Would you please describe the A18 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A18 amendment is the author's amendment. I'm going to quickly go through that lines. 1.2 to 1.3 is a technical change requested by the PCA regarding a transfer of money to the University of Minnesota. Lines 1.4 to 1.11 is adding the fiscal year appropriation for the Drill Corps Library to the bill. We'll be hearing that bill later this evening, as well as another bill. Lines 1.12 to 1.113 adds language to the Board of Water and Soil Resources Water Quality and Storage Practices Appropriation Rider to allow the money to be spent on the new Soil Health Practices Program established in the bill. Lines 1.14 to 3.21 adds an appropriation for the Met Council for a comprehensive plan for White Bear Lake drinking water. This is from House File 2304. Lines 3.22 to 32.5 adds a provision saying that the appropriations in Article 1 for those two items I referenced, if it is enacted more than once during the 2023 session, only one becomes law. Lines 3.26 to 6.25 replaces the odor management section with a revised version of the language. Lines 6.26 to 7.30 modifies the cumulative impact section. Line 7.31 deletes the section increasing per diems for members of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. This is being carried in the Omnibus Legacy Bill. Line 7.32 to 8.31 adds two sections from the White Bear Lake Bill, and then lines 8.32 to 9.2 are technical corrections suggested by staff. I'd ask for your support.
Discussion to the A18 amendment. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hansen, I recognize a few things here, like the Drill Corps Library, which you mentioned we'll be hearing later. I think you said in the dark of night. I might be misquoting you. I apologize. But my only question here is why couldn't we have heard these provisions in committee? I wish we'd had an opportunity to discuss some of these things there, and just was wanting to know what the reasoning was.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heinzman. I think actually all these, the White Bear Lake bill was heard and was sent separately to this committee. And we were advised by staff that we needed to put those individual bills into the omnibus bill as well. So the Drill Corps Library, the White Bear Lake bill, the Bowser bill with soil health, we heard that. And we're incorporating that in. The technical changes, the odor management bill took suggestions that were heard in testimony during committee. The cumulative impacts is on testimony that was heard in committee. And then the per diems is self-explanatory that is being carried elsewhere.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hansen, maybe I should have been more specific. There's definitely changes in a number of these. We'll just give, for example, the order management language that's in the A18. Maybe you could walk through some of the changes there if you would like, but there are some things there that haven't been heard, and so that's why I was asking if there was a reason why it hadn't shown up in committee. Our omnibus was heard, and we were able to go through that just a week or so ago. So if there was a issue with timing or otherwise, that's fine. But I just thought maybe we could talk about that today.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Heinzman, as I said, we listened very closely during the committee discussion. There were some concerns raised. One of the things we did was provide an exemption for the pulp and paper industry. I think you heard that concern that was raised during that. There was questions about how this could be provided in terms of clarity and sort of certainty. So we added the section relating to an odor management plan. So that is the actionable, you'd have complaints and then the management plan and then maintenance to that management plan. So those are items that we heard in committee. And as the author, have tried to accommodate those concerns, and that is why it's in the author's amendment here.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. So what I'm hearing, Representative Hansen, is that the changes that have been made in the bill today were simply a response to discussion in committee. That's all well and good. I'm suggesting that I would have liked to have heard those changes in committee. There's a lot of policy here and a lot of changes that I think would have benefited from a discussion in committee, and so that's why I asked.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A18 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A18 amendment is adopted. And there's one more amendment, the A17 amendment. So I will move the A17 amendment. And for members following along, this is the one we had discussion on last week, the grants management piece that we've discussed that will be added on to all budget bills. Representative Hansen, any discussion to the A17 amendment?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding this is being added to all the bills, so I'd support it.
Great. Any discussion to the A17 amendment? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Just one quick question. Line 1.15 is just stating this is an amendment working towards financial review of nonprofit grant recipients. I'm just wondering why we're not doing this for all grant recipients. So,
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. So specifically nonprofit grant recipients, I wanted to make sure that this could potentially be changed to address all grant recipients as opposed to just nonprofits, Chair.
Representative Heinzman, I maybe will turn to Mr. Sullivan if he has anything to say. We can talk about this as the Office of Grants Management policy currently and was modeled after what we have there, and I can see if Mr. Sullivan can provide a little more context to that.
Madam Chair and members, just to note that the language is specific to nonprofits currently. I think that the Office of Grants Management at the Department of Administration, their policy applies to grants generally, but And Representative or Chair Hansen could comment to this, but I suspect that within most of the omnibus bills, the grants typically go to nonprofit organizations that provide a public service on behalf of the state. But that may not be true universally, but I suspect that's true for the most part.
Representative Hansen, would you like to add anything to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm putting on my Legislative Audit Commission hat, and I believe that we require the agencies to follow the Office of Grants Management. So if that's what you're looking for, Representative Heinzman, I believe they have to comply with those requirements as the agency.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hansen, I'm not entirely sure that is the case, so that's why I was asking. Wanted to make sure that it's applied evenly between all those applying for grants. Maybe it's a discussion we could have offline. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Heinzman. Any further discussion to the A-17 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A-17 amendment is adopted. And so to your bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. House File 2310, as amended, is a problem-solving bill, and it's dealing with problems that have accumulated over time. And those of us in the legislature have heard those, and many of the acronyms and many of the concerns over time. CWD, chronic wasting disease, EAB, emerald ash borer, AIS, aquatic invasive species, PFAS, polyfluoroalkylene substances, PFAS. Any of these issues have been around for a long time. And when there is inaction for a long time, the costs increase. Prevention is better than cleanup in the environmental arena. And what we're trying to do here is prevent future problems, build the base on what we have right now of problem solving, and then deal with some legacy problems, some past problems, some of which have lingered back to the Pawlenty administration, of restoring dollars that were taken then. It includes $670 million above the February forecast base and matches the committee target included in the budget resolution. It provides funding for the MPCA of $233 million, DNR above base, DNR $472.8 million, the Board of Water and Soil Resources $98.7 million, Metropolitan Council Parks, $43.1 million. The Conservation Corps, $1.4 million. The Minnesota Zoo, $27.8 million. And the Science Museum of Minnesota. It also brings in federal money. This includes $24.7 million in federal Pittman-Robertson reimbursements from qualified spending. There has money from the Aquatic Invasive Species Surcharge, $5.1 million. $14.8 million from watercraft registration fees, $6.3 million from a state park fee increase, $12.2 million from increased fishing license fees, $1.7 million for feedlot financial assurance agreements, and $1.4 million for air toxics emissions reporting and rulemaking. This bill also includes several sections. It has a policy section. It has spending recommendations from the Legislative and Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources on spending the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. It has those appropriations. It provides additional staffing in the agencies. But I want to highlight just a few of those acronyms. It provides $93 million in planting new trees and responding to emerald ash borer. That is roughly equivalent to what we spent on dealing with Dutch elm disease in the 1970s. Actually, it's a little bit low if you consider inflation adjusted from that time. Emerald ash borer first was diagnosed in Minnesota in 2008, 2009. As you drive around our state, you will find trees that are dying or have died all over the place. And we need to invest in taking down those trees, trying to sustain some of the trees that have not died yet, and then also replanting trees of a variety of species and a variety of ages. What do we do with those trees when we collect them? We also provide money in there for disposing of those trees properly rather than improperly. Trees are an expensive but a long-term benefit in terms of climate, the appropriations that are in the bill provide for both private sector and public sector trees. We provide aquatic invasive species, $6.6 million, to the University of Minnesota AIS Research Center to take the work that we've invested in the lab into the lakes. We've invested a lot of money into research, and how do we take that and implement that? How do we get tools into Minnesotans' hands to respond to aquatic invasive species? Chronic wasting disease we have dealt with for many years. We have a comprehensive package in this bill dealing with chronic wasting disease. PFAS, a variety of bills that have moved through the legislature in a variety of committees on dealing with PFAS relating to that. Environmental justice, stronger protections for residents of environmental justice areas. Cumulative impacts, Representative Lee has worked on air toxics emissions and cumulative impacts for many years, and the amendment we adopted continued to reflect changes that he has made based on input. MLCAT, this repays the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust with interest. It was raided during the Pawlenty administration and doesn't have enough money to maintain and clean closed landfills. These are just some of the appropriations that are in the bill, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Discussion to the bill. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hansen, a few of the things that I wanted to quickly talk about. Earlier when we were discussing the amendments and how they resulted from conversation in committee and working towards making the bill better, one of the things that continues to be a discussion, I think, across the state is a lot of the fee increases that are also here. And they're always couched, most of the correspondence that I've seen and the news stories, couched against a $17.5 billion surplus. And I just wanted to quickly check and see if I could bring that up again today and just hear from you as the bill author, is there any chance that we might see some potential for change and seeing some of those fees go away? We're talking about increased park fees, watercraft licenses, AIS surcharge, fishing licenses, hunting licenses, and so on going up. And the cumulative impact is significant. So just once again raising that to a higher level discussion, and if you could address that, Representative Hansen, and maybe if there's a chance that that could change, I'd love to report that back.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Heintzman, as you know, this budget area has a lot of dedicated dollars, dedicated with a small d. And these user fees that are used provide the services that are in those accounts. The governor's budget and the agencies made a case for these fees, not only for the short term, but for the long term. And I do have the agencies here, maybe particularly for the DNR, if I could have Commissioner Meyer to just highlight a little bit of those fees to get those on the record and why they're needed.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. First, I'd like to thank Representative Hansen and his committee for this bill that we've worked on to get to this point. And it is true, there are fees contained in this bill. There are also millions and millions of dollars of general fund infrastructure needs within our system that the fee increases will support. For example, there's $35 million for our public hatcheries, our fish hatcheries, that will be supported by a modest $5 fishing license fee increase to continue providing staffing for lake surveys, creel census work, and other work that's needed to manage our lakes to ensure that the fish that we're growing to put in those lakes will survive and need to be there. The state park fee increases, which is a modest fee increase for the state parks, are matched with $25 million general fund infrastructure needs, assessment, rehabilitation, and repair for our state park system that we haven't seen for a long time. Those dollars are also matched by appropriations within the bonding bill. So the approach that we've taken and the committee has supported is large general fund infrastructure support within the budget, followed by fee increases of a modest nature to help support that work into the future. So for the park system, for example, increasing those park permit fees will allow us more staff to take care of the infrastructure work that we're going to be doing, new shower buildings, new trailhead opportunities, new accessibility work. Our accessibility work in our parks are going to be amazing. William O'Brien will be the first park in our system in a few years to be completely accessible from general funded improvements, legacy funds improvements from Chairman Lilly's bill, and the fees that we're increasing. So it's not just increasing the fees to increase fees. It's increasing the fees to support the large generational investments that are contained in this bill. And we want to thank you all and thank Representative Hansen for doing that.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe since Commissioner Meyer is here, I could quickly check and see about there's a particular proposal that isn't included in the bill. Invasive carp was a bill that we were hearing this last year that would get at some of the questions that we've had as to how we might prevent that invasive carp from coming upstream in Minnesota. And I believe that language is missing. If I'm mistaken, I apologize, but I think that is. And is there, if could we just, it's a fairly large bill. So is that there? Is the invasive carp barrier there in the bill or not?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Heintzman, we did not include the $17 million one-time appropriation for infrastructure on leased property in this bill. Our estimates are that there would also be ongoing operations, which would probably take even more fee increases if you were going to maintain that. We don't have tails in the bill. So if you build it, you also have to maintain it, and then you have to operate it. So we did not feel that was important to do that appropriation at this time. Instead, we have the $6.6 million for the labs to lakes appropriation to take the implementation of the research that we have done to deal with invasive species.
Representative Heintzman.
That's all for now. Thank you, Chair.
Any further discussion to the bill?
Madam Chair, if you could just ask the audience, there's some kind of, somebody's playing a video or something. Okay. It's really hard to
Thank
hear.
You. I thought I was going crazy. I do. We're getting some sort of feedback from over here. So, okay. It's been taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, both those statements
can be true. Yeah. Watch it, Representative.
And now I'd like to speak in your committee.
Okay, great. Further discussion to the bill. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hansen, first of all, I do want to compliment you on a couple items in the bill. First of all, you made sure that the landfill fund was restored, that full balance. You just want to talk about that a little bit. It's $29 million, right? So just thank you for doing that. I think that's a good priority. I also wanted to highlight, and it's a small item, but something I was hoping we'd see more of, is that you have, for the Science Museum, you highlight some reduction in admission fees. Now, when I read the language of the bill, maybe you amended this, but it didn't specify how much the reduction in admission fees were. But obviously, the lower those costs are, the more people would be able to go into the Science Museum and utilize that service. Do you have any plans for how much of that is going to result in that?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. Just to give you a little context, the Science Museum has some significant debt, and the appropriation would reduce that debt. And then those debt service payments can go to help hire back the employees that were laid off recently and also reduce those costs for my son went to the science. It's $30 to go in. So if we can reduce those, there is someone here representing the Science Museum who can talk a little bit about their plan. But Representative Garofalo, if you need more clarity or more detail on that, our intent is reduce the debt, allow those debt, what would be going to debt, to be ongoing money, hire back the folks that were laid off, and then reduce the fees to make it more affordable for Minnesotans.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen. And I would hope that, I suspect we're not going to see a lot of that, but it's just a way that people are able to use government services without having to pay more. And that's kind of one of the things we should be doing more of, with the size of the budget surplus. Also, in our packet, and I haven't done any fact-checking on this, but there's a letter from a Stephanie Chappelle. Have you seen this, letter?
I have not.
Okay. Just if you could just pull the letter to the side. We don't need to talk about it now. Can you just read the letter and get back to me and tell me if, I mean, there's some concerning items in this letter, but I haven't fact-checked the source or verified the information, but if you could.
Madam Chair, I can follow up with Representative Graffel.
Okay. Oh, okay. I'm
Representative Graffel, anything?
So, yeah, thank you. Okay. Representative Hansen, so getting back on the bill, $17.5 billion surplus. You've heard the concerns about fees. Why couldn't we have funded those operating costs from the surplus? The governor several times took portions of the surplus, put them into special revenue accounts for 4 years to fund those things out. Why aren't we doing that instead of raising fees?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, so let me clarify a little bit. We are funding the operating, the existing operating with the bill. So we're providing for the full operating services. But when we are investing into things, it takes more money to continue servicing those things. And we don't have tails. So the $670 million, there's $90 million in tails. Of that, about $75 million is for operating for the staff that is there. There is additional dollars that are needed with these dedicated dollars to make sure in those particular fee-driven accounts and the services that they provide that they cover those costs.
So, Representative Graffel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen. There's no doubt the taxpayers are definitely being serviced by the DFL this session. There's no doubt about that. But can you tell me, I don't understand why you can't use the surplus to fund these costs as opposed to reaching into taxpayers' pockets and getting more revenue into the system. The state has an unprecedented amount of money. It is true that we could use those funds to fund those instead of the fees, right? I mean, that we do have that option available to us.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Garofalo, where we can use one-time money, we do. And we actually extend it for 4 years in most cases. So that is more ongoing. But when we are providing for things, we can pay for a thing. Paying for people costs more, and it's ongoing.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, it's a finance committee, not policy related, but you've accomplished something that you've included in this bill, some policy provisions that were even too much for Governor Gavin Newsom out in California, and he vetoed. And his concerns with that were the ongoing enforcement of those costs. Do you have any concerns about the enforcement of the PFAS, the PFAS provisions that you have in your bill?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. We have a number of PFAS provisions. I think as we go into conference, there will be continual discussion about those provisions. We have things that are different than California. I'm interested that you are concerned about California requirements. Maybe we can have that discussion, but there are things in here that I believe we need to do. And I believe there does need to be some additional clarification. But I can tell you from my district and from members all around our state, the concern about PFAS is real. And the desire that we do something now is significant. So we have to work. I'd be happy to work with you on how to make the bill better. We have a ways to go, but there are things that we need to do.
Madam Chair,
Representative Graffel.
Representative Hansen, just a final question here. So you had mentioned in your comments about these are meant to solve problems. A lot of these things are one time in money. Is it your intent that this would build a base for future spending, or is this truly one time money that you won't need to spend money on in the future?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Graffel. I'll use as example the trees. I hope we don't have to come back and spend $93 million on trees. I hope that we don't have to do that. We look at what happened with Dutch elm disease. With over a 2 or 3 year period, we resolved some of that. How do we dispose of them? How do we handle that? We hope that the money that's in here and making that appropriation available is enough. I don't want to come back and do that again. I don't want to come back and have to refill the MLCAT account again with landfills. I'm hopeful that we have resolved the chronic wasting disease. We've spent years debating that. So these one-time dollars, and just on that, we are going back and repurposing some of the money that had not been spent on chronic waste and disease to use this time. So the answer is, I hope not. I'm hoping that we can resolve some of these, and that's the intent, is to deal with it. We've waited too long on several of these, and the cost has gone up. The longer we wait, the more the cost will go up. We need to resolve them now.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. Thanks for those comments. I just will highlight for members the absolute unsustainable path we have on spending here. It's awful. The massive increase in size and scope of spending and the permanent infrastructure that is being built around a larger government. It is unsustainable, not from a political perspective, but from a mathematical perspective. And this, and your bill is in that pathway of unsustainability. So I'll be voting no and would encourage other people to do the same. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Hansen, final word on your bill.
I appreciate the discussion and the comments. This is a problem-solving bill. Many of these problems have been around for a long time. Prevention is better than cleanup. I ask you to join us on this journey of preventing future problems and solving these past problems, and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So we're going to have a series of motions now to merge the two bills. So the first here is Representative Akam. Would you move that the language contained in House File 2754 as amended be incorporated into the Environment, Natural Resource, Climate, and Energy Bill as a separate article?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is my motion.
Great. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No. No.
The motion is adopted. So now to the next motion. I move that the language in House File 2310, as amended, be incorporated into the Omnibus Environment, Natural Resources, Climate, and Energy Bill as a separate article. Any discussion to that motion? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. So now we are on final passage of the bill as amended. So I renew my motion that House File 2310, as amended, be placed on the General Register, that nonpartisan staff be directed to make technical changes as necessary. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 2310, as amended, has been placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hansen. You also have the next bill. And so I will move that House File 2105 be re-referred to the General Register. And we have two amendments here. So the A3 amendment, I will move the A3 amendment. Would you like to describe that amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment was discussed in the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee. It is a provision relating to the City of Duluth. We did not include it when it was in the committee, and we said we had to check with the bonding committee to see if this needed to go in the bonding bill or whether it needed to be in this bill. We received information late yesterday from MMB, so we have this as a separate amendment. We did discuss it in committee, so I would ask for your support. It relates to a cemetery area, and we're returning some land.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So I maybe made a mistake. Did I move the... I think you're describing the A4, but I may have moved the A3. Oh, no, you're doing it correctly. Just ignore me. St. Louis County and Duluth, it was, yep. Okay, so you described the A3. The A3 is in front of us. All things check out. So any discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. To the A4 amendment, and I will move the A4 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 amendment was brought to us by the DNR and St. Louis County, and maybe if they could just describe the amendment. It came after the lands bill went through committee. It's my understanding there is agreement on this.
Hi, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Susan Damon. I'm Assistant Director for Lands in the DNR Division of Lands and Minerals. The proposed A4 amendment would enable the DNR and St. Louis County to undertake a large land exchange with the Conservation Fund, which is also working together with Ecosystem Investment Partners on a wetland banking project. And it involves over 6,000 acres of land, both school trust land that is administered by the DNR, county tax forfeited land, and some county fee land. And the amendment is needed because there are commercial quantities of peat that are otherwise withdrawn from sale. And so we have a provision that allows a conveyance of peat to go forward. There are also some riparian restrictions in the land exchange laws, and this would also allow those the exchange to go forward without the, despite the riparian restrictions. And finally, there's a limit on the value. The values in a land exchange of this size can only be a difference of 110%. And the DNR and St. Louis County have negotiated an agreement with the Conservation Fund and Ecosystem Investment Partners that the school trust fund and the county tax forfeited funds would receive 125% of value from the exchange partner.
Thank you. Discussion to the A4. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. And this is going to be, I guess, a theme on the environment stuff today in committee. But this is a pretty significant amendment. And generally, the lands bill is very non-controversial. Is there any reason that this also was not heard in committee? And I'm struggling to understand exactly what we're trying to get at here and why this couldn't have been heard sooner.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Heinzman, I defer to DNR on that. We just received it.
Ms. Damon.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, the parties were still negotiating this agreement at the time the lands bill was heard. And so we did not know until very recently that we would be able to reach an agreement and go forward with this proposed land exchange.
Representative Heinzman.
Chair, I'm assuming that I would likely fail in this effort, but this seems like something that should go back to committee. I understand that there may have been an issue in terms of timing, but it would be really nice to be able to have a chance to better understand what's going on in this amendment. That would be my suggestion. Until it's heard in committee, I would be a no vote today on the amendment going on.
Further discussion, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. I respectfully have been told here about that there were negotiations going on. Sounds like an agreement was reached after the fact. The agency came to you. I mean, is there any way you can just post a public hearing on this bill and then you could amend this on the floor? If this is as non-controversial as it's being presented, you're not going to have any complaints from us. It's just, I think, you know, there were some problems before in lands bills when somebody showed up with an amendment that wasn't vetted and it caused some significant problems. I'm not alleging that's the case here, but that's why we have hearings on stuff so we know, not as kind of to protect ourselves. Is there something we can do with this as opposed to putting this on today? Is that an option?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to be clear that I didn't know about the negotiations prior to this being presented. And so this is new. The agency came to me. What I would, and I'm just making this up as I'm here, but what I would
Aren't
like
we
to
all?
Do, what I would like to do, Madam Chair, is that this is out here. It was posted yesterday, and that if we... The bill is not going to be heard until next week. And so it's out in public. You've raised concerns. I think it'll be hard to have a hearing, but I'm confident that if there are folks that are concerned about this, they're going to contact us, and we'll get some indication here between now and when the time comes. So what I would do is withdraw the amendment. If we are able to put it on non-controversially, if that's a word, on the floor, I would be open to that.
Representative Heintzman.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Hansen, that would be really helpful and sincerely appreciated.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen, would you like to do that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I was hopeful that we would get a consent calendar on the lands bill, like we almost did on the last one. So I will withdraw the amendment. I think we've had a public discussion with a commitment to look at this. And, Madam Chair, if that's okay with you.
Okay. So I will withdraw the amendment on the chair's behalf. So the A4 amendment has been withdrawn. And so now we are to the underlying bill as amended. So further discussion to the bill. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to repeat myself, but this is a generally non-controversial bill and continues to be so. I support the bill and appreciate the consideration on the previous amendment.
Great. And with that, Representative Hansen, any further discussion to your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking or listening carefully to the consent agenda discussion, but I might have missed it. I guess we'll see in that. But I would ask for your support. I think the accommodation we've made is reasonable to have fuller vetting of this amendment. And I think the lands bill discussion as it is it's a good bill. We need to get back in the habit of routinely processing these bills. They're part of the system of government that we need to do. So I'd ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So I renew my motion that House File 2105, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 2105, as amended, has been re-referred to the General Register. So the last bill on the calendar for the day, and we have 5 minutes, and I think we can do it because we had some discussion about it already, is House File 2324, Representative Hansen. So I will move that House File 2324 be re-referred to the General Register. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2324 is the Drill Corps Library. This is an appropriation in this fiscal year. The building is currently closed because of safety concerns. I'd ask for your support.
Any discussion to House File 2324? Seeing no discussion, I renew my motion that House File 2324 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 2324 has been re-referred to the General Register. So that concludes our business for the day. We are on again for 9 a.m. tomorrow morning and look forward to seeing you then. We are adjourned.